the Govinda Lilamrita states, and then he has a verse from the Govinda Lilamrita, which describes Ratriya Ante, at the end of night, then Vrinda sees the daybreak is coming, so she gets a parrot to go and wake Radha and Krishna from their sleep. They're sleeping in a kunj. Kunj means there's these trees in Vrindavan that they're like umbrellas. You know, we have beech trees that are like that sometimes. But these aren't beech trees. I've seen the trees. I forgot the Sanskrit name for them or the local name for them. So somebody told me the trees, the leaves go out, and they spread out and they go down and they brush against the ground. And so you go through, and then there's a room made of this tree. That's a kunj. So they're in there. You have some privacy. You can't see through, but it's all made by trees. So they're in there, and they're sleeping side by side. The birds come, the parrot comes and wakes them up, but they're not happy. So the Sakis are watching from a distance. They wake up and they look very charming, Radha and Krishna. And there's mention of a she monkey named Kati, who also was talking. They gaze at each other, but then they realize they have to go. And so they each go to their own home, and then they go to bed in their own proper beds. That's the Leela at that time for that particular thing. In Bhaktivinoda, I worship Radha and Krishna by remembering this pastime. Remember this pastime and sing Krishna's names. Then you will get the treasure of Krishna Prema and Krishna's Dham. So he just sticks it on. There's no transition. All the verses are about the Shishastrika prayers, and then this is just there. But it's associated. But to me, I'll show you why I believe he's doing this. Okay. He says here, as one executes the devotional practices according to the instructions of Shishastika, the pastimes of Krishna gradually manifest within the heart. That's what he says. In other words, those pastimes come. And I suppose that just as in the beginning, I know that you can chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and without being distracted from the holy names, also remember the Shishastika prayers. Eventually, also Krishna's Astakaliya Leela will be manifest in the same way. This reminds me of that verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati, where he says, and I don't have my computer, so I can't tell you what the verse is. I don't remember the Sanskrit. But he says that to the extent that, this is one of those yata tata verses, to the extent that one engages in the service of the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to that same extent, automatically, one will taste the nectar which flows from the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. So what does it mean to engage in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? It means to engage in Sankirtan according to the instructions of Shishastika. Then automatically, yadrichchaya is the word in Sanskrit. It means it happens spontaneously of its own accord. And that's sort of the way Bhaktivinoda Thakur does. He just sticks it at the end of every chapter. That's the rahasya. Ultimately, this will become revealed.
But in terms of which one matches up with which, it's sort of a mystical number.
He just says there's eight pairs of names. Corresponding to these eight pairs, the first pair of names, Hare Krishna, signifies. Use the word signify. The subduer of ignorance. Well, I I don't know what he says, but that's what the translator has here. I don't know. Signifies the subduer of ignorance and the performance of Nam Sankirtan with faith. See, that's what that Shraddha is there. The second pair, Hare Krishna, means Krishna's names are invested with all potencies, Nam Nama Kari Bhakta. One should have attachment for bhajan by taking shelter of the holy names in the association of sadhus. Gradually, by performing bhajan, anartas, unwanted contaminations, are destroyed. As anartas are removed, nishta, firm faith, develops. The third pair, Krishna Krishna, indicates the company of pure devotees and becoming fixed in firm faith throughout the day and the night. Kirtani is sadahari. By the fourth pair, Hari Hari, unmotivated devotional service is awakened along with the taste for Nam Sankirtan. Nadaram na janam na sundarim kapitam. The fifth pair, Hari Rama, represents the taste for pure service. Pure service here means in one's lila, Krishna lila, along with remembrance of the holy names as prescribed in the Shishastika. In the sixth pair, Hari Rama, chanting in the beginning stage of transcendental emotion leads to material detachment and complete attachment to Krishna. So this is bhava, transcendental emotion. The seventh pair, Rama Rama, awakens attachment for the mellow of conjugal rasa, the shelter of Radha's lotus feet, and feelings of separation. The eighth pair, Hari Hari, leads to the attainment of the goal of life, loving service to Radha and Krishna, following the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan throughout the eight divisions of day and night, Ashta Kala. And then he quotes Ado Shraddha Tattu Sadhu Sangota Bhajana Kriya Tato Nartani Vritti Shat. So on like that. He quotes that verse. It's just what he says. And there's no explanation of why these names, why this, what's that. But you have to understand that in this case, the Rama, the word Rama, here has to, in his movement, denotes Krishna. Radhika Ramana, in that sense. Anything else?
It seems that when we chant our rounds, this first verse is the most applicable for us because of, for neophytes like me, because we're on lower stage rather than the stage of Ruchi, Asakti.
Well, I think the first three, actually. But the others will also be. You'll be surprised at how much actually they're applicable. But the first three, not just the first.
Yeah. You were saying when you were chanting the 64 rounds or when you were studying these verses to be able to meditate on the chanting, thinking of the Shikshastika prayer. So how is that? For those of us who are neophyte, how do you begin to do that? Are you thinking, like when you say the Hare Krishna, you're thinking of verse 1-2, or how does that?
No, I just first of all, when I chant the holy names, I think of them in pairs. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I mean, the sort of mental grouping I have is in pairs. And then when I say, and just I can, the thing is that if you can say, if you can associate the whole verse with a number, it's like that old joke about, you know, the prisoners who had a number for every joke, and then somebody saw number 8 and everybody would burst into laughter. You know. So Similarly, first of all, if you learn so if you say six immediately, you know, the whole verse just pops into your mind as a whole. Not that you recite it all mentally, because there's not enough time, but you can grasp it as a whole just by saying the number. So similarly, by saying the pair of names. And so, but you have to know it very well, I think, and be quite familiar with it, and not have to, and kind of become absorbed in it. So that way, by going Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, I can also say like going 1, 2, 3, 4, and also remembering the first four of the Shishastika prayers. And sometimes, you know, one word, I, you know, is number five. Sada is number three, you know, like that. So this way, so one particular key word even will sort of signify the whole verse. Because I discovered that, you know, especially if while chanting, you're supposed to concentrate your mind. I would chant the Shishastika prayers before I began, and before I began every 16 rounds, I think, I would chant the Shishastika prayers. And I was chanting a few other prayers as well. And then sometime during the day I'd sit and study them some more and think about them and meditate on them. So I discovered that concentrating the holy name, that what comes into your head somehow pops into your head, some phrase or lines from the Shishastika, or some idea that the Shishastika is there, it brings your consciousness right back to the holy name. It doesn't take it off in another direction, but it brings it back in again. So it helps to concentrate. Ultimately, I began to realize the statement that every time you chant one round is the equivalent of studying an Upanishad. That's true. Because the name is very, very simple, and it seems to be there's not much content, Hare Krishna, you know, I mean, what's there? But actually, everything is there. Actually, what the words Hare Krishna denote, Prabhupada says in one place, is all that there is. Because Hare is Krishna's energy. And so, yeah, it's Radharani, the internal potency, but then the external potency is also her reflection. So ultimately, it's all Krishna's energies. And there's Krishna and Krishna's energy. So when you say Hare Krishna, you've actually exhausted the ontology. There's nothing more. That's all that there is. You've accomplished, encompassed in two words, everything that there is. That's quite a feat. So although it's very simple, it also is very rich in content. So actually, it is like studying an Upanishad. In other words, you get the same advancement in Vedic wisdom and knowledge is there. Because it's all in your heart anyway. And if your heart is with the Supersoul.
You said something about the name Ram. When we're chanting Hare Rama, what are we actually thinking of?
Well, it depends on where you're at. Rama can be Ramachandra, Balaram. There's also Parashuram for that way. There's three Ramas. But also it's a name for Krishna himself, personally, as the enjoyer of Radharani. Therefore, it's a particularly intimate name for Krishna, too. Because Prabhupada, in fact, he comments on this somewhere, how people are accusing us in India that when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, we mean Balaram and not Ramchandra. And that was considered to be, you know, a fault by the partisans of Ramchandra, that we don't really mean Ramchandra. I have heard, though I don't know how authoritative it is, but I can imagine how it's true, that the Vaishnavas in Puri, when they chant Hare Krishna, they think of Hare as referring to Subhadra, who's Yogamaya, not Radharani, whereas we think of Radharani. Uh, But if you're thinking in terms of pairs, then when you say Hari Rama, and if the Hare is Radharani, then that Rama has to be Krishna. But you could say Hari Rama and mean the Hari is also Lord Nrisingadev. Because Hari means one who takes away. Lord Nrisingadev takes away the obstacles in devotional service. So you could meet Lord Nrisingadev if you wanted to, by Hari. Narahari, right? Narahari.
It literally means lion.
Huh?
It's used in the Bhagavatam places just to mean a lion.
The word Hari?
Yeah.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah.
Why?
I guess because lions, that's the way they deal with their food, is they kill it and they take it away.
I've seen that movie. They always show that nature porn, you know, where they watch the lions, you know, have sex and eat and kill and all that stuff.
It caught me off guard, but in the discussion of Bindu Sarovara, where Cardinal Mooney was, there was a description, all of a sudden I was reading through and I saw the name Hari come up, mm-hmm. and the word for word it was the lion.
Mm. Anyway, so you know, it depends upon your, you know, thing. Because you can worship, I mean, you worship Lord Nrisingadev, you can worship it. This is in the Navadvipa Mahatmya, you worship Lord Nrisingadev so to help attain Radha and Krishna. So, but what Prabhupada said is actually, in dealing with this controversy, that's where he mentions there's three Ramas, and that actually all of them are none different from Krishna. But he didn't mention the fact that actually for most Gaudiya Vaishnavas, I think, we're at least in the conjugal mood, Rama is Radha, Hari Rama is Radha and Krishna. But I can imagine somebody who's chanting in the mood of an advanced stage in the fraternal mood would think of Hari Rama as Krishna and Balaram. But Prabhupada never said it has to be. Yeah. If you build a house, the whole world can live, and take your pick. Yeah?
I had a question on Chaitanya Dharpa and Arjuna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that also refer to the cessation of Vaishnava Parat and Nama Parat?
Mm-hmm. Sure, that's a dirty thing. There are four dirty kind of dirty things. One is the effect of past the karma from past pious impious activities. The anarthas that arise from past impious activities. The anarthas that arise from past pious activities too. Then there's the anarthas that arise from offenses against the holy name, against the deities, against the Vaishnavas. And then there's the anarthas that arise from bhakti.
That arise from
bhakti, yeah. Fame, position, being worshipped, you get attached to these kind of things, it's considered anarthas that arise from bhakti. These are all discussed, these four anarth kinds of anarthas are discussed in here. Madhurya Kandambani, he mentioned those, and he describes the different rate at which they disappear, and the different stages of elimination. So those four kinds of unwanted things. Adi anarthas.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking also that in some sense...
We'll discuss anartha and vritti in the next verse.
Mm-hmm. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is analysis that anarthas arising from aparad aren't absolutely eradicated until attainment of the association of the Lord, in some ways clarifies what's happening in sarvatma snapanam. That mm-hmm. kind of highest stage is that last final.
Yeah, the last bath. Right. Because he means that there's different stages of prema also, all the way up. And you attain prema and then you keep on going. Mm-hmm. And finally, there's apparently the association of the Lord is the culmination of it. Okay? Right. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.